Would you please join me in the serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Great. Okay, now it's time for our featured speaker tonight, Sherry.
I'm disappointed. That's my husband. And I said, now you can introduce me any way you want. Just, you know, really, really, any way you want. And that's all I get. That's okay. Anyway, I'm Sherry and I'm a crybaby. I'm also an alcoholic. So I came armed with a lot of Kleenex. And I'm really, really pleased to be here. And I want to thank Marcia for railroading me. And I want to welcome everybody in the room, and it's wonderful to see so many people in the room, and actually to be able to see you. Yeah, you know, and I think that this Aragon meeting on Friday night is one of the first meetings that I came to when I first moved to California, and I was 5.5 years sober, and I moved here from Toronto, Canada. Actually, I moved here from Peterborough, Ontario, Canada. And I got sober in Toronto December 1st, 1982. And I want to wish happy birthday to the birthday boys, both of you. Congratulations. And I'm right behind you, Mr. 30, because I'm 29 years and counting, and God willing, you know. And it's just a miracle, like these fellows have shared. Alcoholics Anonymous does transform our lives and turn us into people, you know, that are really, really different from, well, I'm certainly, I like to think that I'm different from, you know, the way that I was when I first came here. And what I hope to share with you tonight is my experience. Strength and hope and some despair and some of that hopelessness as well. But what it was like and what happened and what it's like now is the way that I was taught to share this program with other alcoholics and with other people that were looking for answers in their lives about, you know, the unmanageability and what was going on. I'm the youngest of three girls. And if any of you have been through treatment, you know, and you talk about the dysfunctional family and stuff, I was probably the mascot. And I was also the sneaky one. Being the youngest, I got a chance to look at what happened to Karen, my oldest sister, and watch what happened to Nancy, who marched to a different drummer, and she was probably the lost child. But we were all kind of wild children. I was the sneakiest, I think. And so I tried to do that look good for a long time, and I like to think that I pulled it off. You know, I got into a lot of trouble behind it, and I really don't know how this is going to come out tonight. But what I'd like to say is that when I first came into the program, I was told that whenever we get up to share in a meeting and whenever we open our mouth, we, you know, give the pitch or we say what we are supposed to say. And it's not necessarily the talk that we want to give. And it's, you know, it's not the best that we could have done. It's not the worst that we could have done. It's just the one that we did. And so in preparation for coming and speaking to you tonight, I did a lot of reflecting and put a lot of thought into some of the things that brought me here. But first and foremost, I guess I want to say that from the time that I was really little, I had that feeling of being different than. And for me, it was less than. And the way that I tried to cope with that was to try and be way over the top, more than. And it was just to be equal to, you know, because when you're starting out below zero, you know, I mean, I had to act out really big just to feel equal to, you know, And like I say, I've got two older sisters, and I was trying to live up to what they were doing, and I could never keep up. And I guess that I was a victim, you know, from the get-go. But what I did discover at a very early age was, if you're a daredevil and you want to be accepted, then you're willing to go to any lengths, you know, including, you know, getting into all kinds of trouble, which I certainly did. And I did a lot of things, and I accumulated a lot of baggage and acquired a lot of shame before I even picked up a drink. So when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and I said, well, I'm Sherry and I'm an alcoholic, and now I, you know, kind of get it a little bit, I thought that that was an excuse. And I had trouble getting that word alcoholic out, because I had all that shame before I ever took a drink. And, you know, I couldn't forgive myself by saying, well, it's because I have a disease, because I was a bad person, you know. What happened to me was that when I was very, very young, like I say, I wanted to be with the in crowd, and I would go to any lengths to do that. And my parents would entertain a lot in our home. And after the party, during the party, before the party, we would, you know, finish the drinks and the martinis and the olive and, you know, all that stuff. And I didn't like it. But, you know, in the end of my drinking, that's what I was drinking, was the dry vermouth. You know, I didn't like the vodka so much, but I was drinking the vermouth, you know, and just, yeah. Ugh. Can you remember that stuff? Ugh. And it was nasty. When I was 3 years old, I guess I knew that I was sensitive to sugar. And I had a nickname from the time that I was really young that my dad used to call me, and that was the Candy Kid. And I think that there's a lot of sugar in alcohol. And I used to bribe the next-door neighbor kids to go to the candy store with me and say, you know, I'll give you a dime if you go to the candy store with me. And I would buy sugar and buy them sugar, and I'd get sugared up. And by the time that I was, you know, in my early teens, I knew that if I was going to be drinking alcohol, that I would be way, way, way out of control. And so I used to say, oh, I'm fine with my poopsie, you know, and I'd have Pepsi Cola, and I'd watch all of my, you know, junior high and high school friends partying and everything. And I was, I just had this healthy fear. My father was the designated alcoholic in the family, and he was a bully to my mom. He was like a wolf in sheep's clothing, I guess. You know, he was a self-made man and a pretty successful guy, but in our home, you know, what looked really, really good on the outside, you know, when we all got around the dinner table, my dad would start picking apart all of the different things, and usually it came back to what my mom was doing wrong. And I don't know if any of you can relate to this, but in, you know, I love my mom, I love my dad, and I resented all of the stuff that was going on in our home because I was a kid. But I sided with the strong one, you know, and so here's mom, you know, the untreated Al-Anon, you know, and she's crying, and we're all fighting at the dinner table, and dad is being a bully, and he, you know, saying, I'm going to the office to draw, you know, and he would leave the room and he'd go to the office and draw. He was a designer, and he would go, and he was a real ladies man. So I don't know if he was drawing or what he was doing, but he wasn't at home. And mom was crying, you know. So, you know, so it was very, very chaotic. And again, we tried to make it look good on the outside, and on the inside, there was a lot of other anxiety and stuff going on. And all through high school and, I barely made it out of high school. I graduated 6 months early from high school with the minimum number of credits that you could get and still receive a diploma. And I couldn't sit in my chair in that last year of high school. I couldn't sit in my chair ever. And in my junior year of high school, I spent probably a good half of the time in the guidance counselor's office. You know, I was still afraid to drink, but I had all the isms, you know, and I was doing all kinds of sugar and carbohydrates and all that other stuff, and a lot of that stuff goes into alcohol, you know. And and the last year of high school, what I was doing was I thought I was having an affair because my dad used to have affairs. So I thought, well, my dad can have an affair, so I can have an affair. But what was really happening was my riding instructor, I like horses, my riding instructor, who was, I think, maybe 33, 34, 35 years old with a wife and five kids, was, you know, making advances at all the young girls who took riding lessons. And I was one of those sitting ducks, you know, that I must have had this thing on my forehead that said victim, you know. And I thought that I was having an affair with this guy for what ended up being close to a year. A year? Maybe like 3 years? And did Mom and Dad know about it? Dad certainly didn't. Did Mom know about it? She kind of had an idea. And the problem was that, you know, she had no support, and she was very much afraid and didn't have a voice. And I was, you know, one of those people that was just starving for attention and love and looking in the wrong places, you know, and boy, the party was on. And we used to have our party with cold duck and McDonald's, you know, it was great. You know, and you know, over the course of 3 years, you know, we went from, you know, motel to motel or the back of the camper or wherever it was, you know, and eventually it was time for me to buy another horse. And so not once, but more than once, I went across the state lines. So he should have gone to jail, you know, and I tell this story because I never used to be able to tell the story about what happened, because I did a lot of things, like I say, before I ever took a drink, and it was all my fault, and I was a house wrecker, you know, and this man had a family with five children, and I was going to marry him and gallop off into the sunset and be their mother. And their mother was going to go back to Bogota or wherever, you know, and it was all very romantic. And I believed the whole thing, and I took it all hook, line, and sinker. And I don't know if that's what made me drink, but the alcohol fueled the fire of every negative thing that happened to me from the time that I was pretty young. And I was just absolutely lost. I married to get out of the house when I was just turning 19 years old, and I didn't marry that guy. I got rid of that guy, and I won't go into the details of that, but as far as I know, he's still out there. I never heard anything, but I did a lot of work on trying to heal, you know, what I felt about my own guilt and I don't know, just girl issues. But I married another horseman, you know, and I just liked these guys that liked horses, you know, and I married this fellow that was a jockey in the 60s. And when I married him, he said he had all, you know, this Swiss bank account and all, it was all very romantic and exciting. And so I thought, oh, there's a really exciting kind of a guy. So I married him, and we moved from Wisconsin to Canada. And he went to work at the racetrack, and it was all very glamorous and everything. And we used to go out to nightclubs in Toronto. And one night we went out to this club right across from Woodbine Racetrack, and I think it was called the Ascot Inn. And there was this lady there singing in the bar, and her name was Katie Murtaugh. And Katie was just, you know, singing about New York and L.A. and all these romantic places. And I said to him, and probably everybody else in the room, I could do that, you know. And I decided that that's what I was going to do. And so I became a singer and a guitar player and an entertainer, you know. And all these stories that I used to tell myself from the time that I was a kid, I believed them. You know, and not only did I believe them, I didn't live in this fantasy world. I acted out the way we love to act out. And the alcohol, like I say, fueled the fire of everything that I did. And I was in that marriage for 7 years, and my husband John, the ex-jockey, had a real head start on the drinking. And he was really, really good to me and had lots of empathy, and we really related to each other when we first got married. And then by the end, we were screaming and yelling, and I was throwing things and breaking windows and china and stuff like that. And it was way worse than what I, you know, witnessed when I was growing up. And because my parents, like I say, it looked really good on the outside, and it didn't go much further than that. But I knew that it wasn't, you know, really what it looked like it was on the outside. And so when I left my husband, I have an older sister, as I mentioned in the beginning. My older sister Karen was 4 years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous in Wisconsin. And she met a guy on the AA campus, and you know what happens then. They, you know, got together. Why are you smiling? Hi, honey. Boy meets girl on the AA campus, and all hell breaks loose. But she and my brother-in-law, Phil, 12-stepped me on the top of the CN Tower. And they took me, well, they took me to Honest Ed's Warehouse for dinner after that, and that's a speakeasy down on Front Street in Toronto. And I was drinking that dry vermouth, you know, with no vodka or anything, and it was just the dry vermouth, and they were both sitting there sober going, you know, and I'm going, what? You know, it's good. Because I didn't like that sweet stuff, you know. And I mentioned that I wanted to be a singer, and I did that for a lot of the marriage for about 5 years. I was a professional singer, songwriter, guitar player. The first year that I was singing, full-time singing, my husband and I split up, and I thought it was because he was an alcoholic. And I had gone to Al-Anon. My sister introduced me to Al-Anon, and then after that, I wanted to find out more about alcohol and Alcoholics Anonymous, and so I started going to AA. And what happened was I caught the disease, you know, and I couldn't blame my parents. I couldn't blame those people that took advantage of me when I was just a kid. And I couldn't blame my ex-husband, the jockey. I kept on getting into trouble. And, you know, I was on the road in my first, oh gosh, I think it was probably one of my first road trips to a place called Northern Canada. I don't remember what the name of the place was, but they had a big bear. It was the Algo Inn, and they had a big bear on the end of the hotel, and it was a place where they did copper mining or uranium mining or something in Canada. It was all white, and this big bear on the side of the hotel. And the hotel manager came to talk to me, pulled me aside, and he said, Sherry, this was after my husband dropped me off, just before I separated from him. He dropped me off and left, and I was there, and I met up with some customer, and the next morning the manager of the hotel said, Sherry, just because somebody's nice to you, you don't have to sleep with them. And, you know, things like that used to happen to me when I drank. And things like that used to happen to me a lot because I didn't know how to live and I didn't know how to be okay with myself. And the whole time that I drank, it got worse and worse. I didn't plan to give this talk when I came here tonight, but it's just coming out this way. But what I have to say is that when I got 12-stepped into AA, and my sister and my brother-in-law really encouraged me. My sister is just sarcastic enough and mean enough to say, oh, yeah, you go to meetings all right. 6 meetings in 6 months. Huh. You know. And she said, oh, yeah, you're doing your steps all right, when I finally got to AA. You know, because Al-Anon was easy, you know. My Al-Anon sponsor was saying, yeah, Sherry, some people need more than just Al-Anon. And I didn't know what she was talking about. But I went to these AA meetings, and I finally started to get it. And that someone at one of my first meetings said that, you know, hey, Sherry, you look good on the outside, but how are you really on the inside? And I started to cry. And I cried, for my first 5 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was happily unaware, and I was shut down, and I was numb, and I was greater than anyone and anything. That ego was so huge that, you know, I was going to marry that guy when I was 15 years old. And when I did marry, I was going to prove my parents wrong, because they said that it would never work. You know, and we stayed married for 7 years, and I got that 7-year itch, you know, went to Al-Anon, and then caught alcoholism. You know, go figure. But once I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was introduced to the women in this program. And what I want to say to all you men and women in this program is that I heard loud and clear, the women stick with the women and the men stick with the men. Did I do that? No. I got an AA boyfriend in my first 30 days. You know, and he moved in, and all hell broke loose for another year and a half. And then, you know, he got drunk, and I ended up in the psychiatric ward and major depression, you know, in sobriety. I didn't drink, but I was stark raving sober. You know, and so I went into the psychiatric ward, and my sponsor said, you know, If you keep working on you, it'll get better. And what Rosemary said was, Sherry, you keep working on you no matter what he says or does. And if he drinks, it won't be your fault. And my psychiatrist says, Sherry, you keep working on you no matter what he says or does. And if you sleep with him again, you're dead. And, you know, that's, I'm sorry, it's just a part of my ism, so don't get me drunk, okay? So I went home from the psychiatric ward and asked wicked old Lou to please move out, and he did. And I kept on going to meetings, and what happened was I ran to meetings, and my partner back then ran away from meetings. And I ran to my sponsor, and I called my sponsor, and I did my steps, and I was madly trying to do the program, and my partner ran the other way. And it was destined to not work, and I guess that was my higher power's way of, you know, finally teaching me something of what I needed to learn. And I was scared to death to sit in my apartment by myself. I was scared to death to sit quietly and just stay in my own skin. I was terrified to hear my thoughts, to feel my feelings, and to cry my tears, which, as I say, I cried for the first 5.5 years. And then I probably cried for the first 5.5 years in my marriage because I got scared again, you know. And I met this wonderful man, Bob, down on the beach at lifeguard station number 6. And I had 5.5 years, and he had 4 years. I had 6.5 years. He had 4 years. I don't know. I'm still more sober than you are. No, I'm not. No, I'm not. We both have almost 20. Well, right now we have 24 hours, the same amount we had last night at 9:05 p.m. So we're even, right? Okay. Okay. And he's really, thank you for letting me share my blow-by-blow nasty story of what I did behind alcohol, because again, I was that drunken bimbo on the bar stool, you know, and that ex-husband that I was married to for 5.5 years, you know, we used to take pride in saying, oh yeah, take my wife out to get me guys, you know, and I mean, it was just really, really sick. It was really, really sick, and everything was a big joke. And there was no connection between the heart and the spirit and the body or anything. It was just a total disconnect for years. for years. And through Alcoholics Anonymous, like I say, I learned that women stick with women. I got a sponsor right away. And Rosemary, and she and I are still friends today. She's in Canada most of the time, and she's a snowbird in Florida in the wintertime. And she sends me emails, and I just kind of delete them a lot because she does that all the time, and I read some of them. But you know, 29 years later, you know, she fired me so that I would get a sponsor here in California when I moved here in spring of 1988. The first meeting that I came to at the Aragon Church here, I listened to Dr. Paul, who used to be page 449 in the big book, Acceptance is the Answer to All Our Problems Today. And I was so full of resentment. You know, you can hear it in my story. I mean, it was just bleh, all over everything. It was everybody else's fault. And I cut my teeth in Alcoholics Anonymous on page 449. And Rosemary had me reading that all the time. All the time. You know, every time that I would call her and cry and, but he did this, and it's, go read page 449. You know, and so I listened to Dr. Paul when I came here and I walked up to him and I said, oh, you know, hi, Dr. Paul. You know, it was wonderful. You know, and the other thing that I found out when I left Canada is I got this tape on relationships. Somebody thought I needed help with relationships, you know, and I moved to California and I went to South Coast Hospital then in Laguna Beach, now Mission Hospital, Laguna Beach. And I listened to Terry Gorski. If some of you may know his name. He used to talk at Adult Children of Alcoholics conferences, and he did a big speech in the 80s about why alcoholics and addicts, when they give up alcohol and drugs, they get into addictive relationships. And boy, I needed to hear that. And this guy in Canada gave me this tape, two tapes, when I was moving to California. And like I say, I was here for like 3 weeks, and I meet Dr. Paul, page 449, and I hear Terry Gorski giving his pitch, and I'm in the hub of all this wonderful stuff in Alcoholics Anonymous. Pretty much from the first 6 months of my sobriety, I've always had, along with the program, either a psychiatrist, a counselor, a therapist of some sort when I'm working on my stuff, because the big book says that some of us do need more than just AA. And I'm one of those people. You know, I lean towards being depressed, and I have taken medication for it, and I don't like to. And the people that, you know, usually kind of maybe might have depression and legitimately maybe sometimes benefit from a little bit of medication, we usually don't like to take it. But the big book says we follow direction. And I have a sponsor. I work my steps. I have had a psychiatrist. I've worked through my ACA issues and my incest survivor issues. And all of those things that I had so much guilt and shame and trouble behind. And I couldn't stand up in front of a group of other recovering men and women and tell my story without turning into that sniveling, broken, dirty basket case again. You know, and I'm an alcoholic woman, and I have recovery, and I have a life today, and I have a profession that I'm proud to have. I help other alcoholic women in recovery. And first job I had when I came to California was to work at Aaron Brothers down here on Pico. Second job I had when I came to California was in a women's shelter here in San Clemente. And then I started going to school at Saddleback College in recovery, and it was like being in a recovery program for about another 2 or 3 years, which I really, really needed. You know, and it, once again, Alcoholics Anonymous and the program and people in recovery saved my ass and saved me from myself. I didn't know how to do life on life's terms. I told you I have a sponsor named Rosemary in Canada, and she's still close to me today. I had a sponsor here in California that I got within my first, I'd say about a year and a half here in California. And I went through a few, and I was not hip, slick, and cool like all of you beach people. I didn't fit in with any of you. I was scared of all of you, and probably you all hated me anyway. And so I found this fairy godmother named Rosemary. I had another Rosemary in California. And Rosemary, I met in Laguna Niguel. I think a lot of you know her, Rosemary O. She passed away in 2006. And she was my sponsor for 14 years. And in 2006, when she passed away, I went into a tailspin. I didn't drink. But once again, I was stark raving sober. And I was a dry drunk and making my husband pretty miserable. And I was miserable. And I stuck really close to the psychiatrist. I went through about 5 or 6 jobs over the period of about 6 or 7 years. I could not hold a job. I did a lot of things, you know. I did a lot of things, including being a counselor, working with women and recovering, you know, from alcohol and drug problems. And I had to leave that job because I was afraid it was going to hurt somebody, you know, by being so messed up myself. And don't you know, the lady that recruited me into that job back in 1992, 93, I was working up around St. Joseph's at the time. And that was Patty Oslinker Moore. She has been the executive director at the counseling center where I worked for about 1.5 years, and then I had to stop because I was burning out. And there are some other people in the room here tonight that I worked with back, gosh, in the early 90s, Kappa by the Sea. And, you know, one of the psychiatrists that I had early on in recovery suffered from manic depression, and he had committed suicide while I was his just becoming his patient. And, you know, again, life on life's terms, a lot of this stuff happens, and I get devastated really, really easy, you know. And the thing that I've learned by continuing to come to meetings and work with my sponsor and do the steps and work on recovery and give it back, and the only job that I can hold is working in recovery. You know, it's not 12-step work when you work in that field, but boy, you know, I mean, you're my people. You know, and it doesn't matter where I meet alcoholics and addicts. You know, that's something that I can do. And that's something that this blow-by-blow history that we have, you know, our stories are different, but we all have our own heartbreak. We have our own shame. We have our own challenges. And that's what we have to share with other people in this program. Behind all those different things that happened, I didn't have to drink. I didn't have to use. Except, remember when I said something about sugar? I was using sugar the whole time. I was sober, but sugar makes me crazy. So guess what? I had to add another 12-step program. ACA, CODA, Al-Anon, AA, OA, HEA. I'm from Canada, A. Well, I was in Canada for 12 years. But anyway, I'm here now and you're stuck with me for the time being because I got a few more minutes to go and then I'm going to wrap it up. I don't know what else to say except that's what it was like. That's what happened. What it's like now is I mentioned this woman who recruited me to go to work as a counselor. Well, I was terrified. And I was doing stuff for that counseling center, you know, just like flying blind on faith. My higher power and Alcoholics Anonymous sent me into the high schools and detox centers and single mom programs and residential housing of all different kinds, carrying the message, you know, telling my recovery story and also talking about things like anger management. And eating disorders I don't know, goals and values and stuff and how we sometimes lose sight of them, but we can find them again, you know, and we do. And I worked for Patty for a long time, and we just discovered a few weeks ago that she has a brain tumor. And she had been my boss about... like I say, it's about 15 years ago. And about 5 years ago, She came to me again, and she started a new counseling center here in South Orange County. And she said, "Sherry, I want you to come back and work for me again." And I wasn't ready. You know, I was still just melting all the time, you know. And I didn't know that the, you know, the sugar acted in my brain the way the heroin acts in the brain, you know. I was just really, my emotional sobriety was just not what it could have been. As hard as I worked, I didn't know the answers, and I had to keep on working this program and working my steps and looking inside and going through those layers and layers and layers of the onion and get it back to me. And what was I doing to check out, numb out, use, avoid, distract, everything? Instead of feeling my feelings and not running from them, I was always spinning out and getting crazy about something. And, you know, God love him. I've got a wonderfully patient husband who puts up with a woman that can be a real whirlwind. What somebody say about that tornado, you know? Thank God the rain stopped, Paul-in-law, you know? And but, you know, life today, I'm sober. I'm working two different jobs, two different recovery programs, and I love it. I love what I do today. Patty has had brain surgery, and she probably will not last out the month. And as I say, in 2006, when my sponsor of 14 years died, I spun totally out of control. And now I'm sticking really, really close with the other women that are also recovering that I work with. And all of us went to her home to see her last Saturday and spent some time with her and her husband. And, you know, I've learned how to do that with this fellowship. And I've learned how to take better care of myself, give it back, get out of myself, and remember that I wouldn't have any of the serenity and any of the recovery that I have now if I didn't work with you guys and didn't let you guys into my life. And, you know, if I don't listen to another woman share her story and her, what is it, no matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. You know, if there's one other woman in here that has the kind of shame that I talked about, you know, please come, and I'd love to talk to you after the meeting. You know, because I need it. I need it. You know, and maybe you do too. You know, and to the guys, what do I tell you guys? You know, I love you all. You know that. I love you all. I always have. You know, but I got the best one in the room for Sherry. And I don't know. Yeah, he's smiling. Just wait till I get you home, honey. I don't know why God pointed me to this man, but my higher power, that higher power steering, you know, I was told in Alcoholics Anonymous that you had to reach up, you know, and I always thought that I was safe because I was in charge and I was in control and I was like the man on top, right? You know, but then when I fall, then who do I have to count on, right? There's nobody. You know, I couldn't count it. And I didn't trust God because I didn't trust my own conscience. I didn't trust me. I didn't have a higher power until I got into this program. But I started to take some risks. I started to risk letting people into my life and sharing my shit. And, you know, and sharing my strength and hope and my faith and my love of the higher power. You know, I couldn't even talk about God when I came here without, I don't know, a whole lot of uncomfortable stuff coming up because, you know, I think that we all have our own interpretation of the higher power, you know, but now I can be around people with all kinds of different higher powers than mine, and I'm okay with it, you know, and thank God, you know, because it was excruciating for so long, you know, and it kept me out of my own recovery for a long time because of my own fear, my own prejudice, my own, what is it? Contempt prior to investigation? You know, and I couldn't do that live and let live thing very well. But in this program, we learn all kinds of tools. You know, we all come from different backgrounds. We're a group of people that normally would not mix, is what it says in the 12 and 12. You know, but we have this one thing in common, and that's our alcoholism. And I don't pick up a drink, and I don't use. And when I get in trouble, I know where to go to for help. And I try my darndest to get myself there, because I don't want to ever go back out anymore. And I don't want to, you know, die from this disease. And I see women that are coming out of the fog and really, really getting better and really doing well. And I see women every day that are struggling, that don't quite make it. And you know, we don't know what happens when somebody goes back out and we don't see them again. Well, maybe we do know what happens, you know, and it can happen to all of us. You know, so that's why we keep coming back in the program. And if I was a little bit too serious or dramatic, you know, for you guys tonight, I apologize. But, and I don't know if I helped anyone else in this room, but God, I hope I did. And I know that you all helped me very, very, very much. And Marcia, I thank you so much for railroading me up here tonight. And like I say, once you get me started, you can't shut me up. I didn't know if I would be able to go for 40 minutes. But like I say, I used to be an entertainer, you know, I used to be a singer-songwriter, you know, the token blonde in the band, the big bimbo, and, you know, some things never change. But I did not bring my guitar, and I didn't sing, and I won't do that tonight. We'll save that for maybe another time. But thank you all very much for letting me share and keeping me sober. God bless you.